صدق الله العلي العظيم.
And it is not for the believers to go forth to battle all at once, for there should separate from every division of them a group remaining to obtain understanding in the religion and warn their people when they return to them that they might be cautious. O you who have believed, fight those adjacent to you of the disbelievers, and let them find in you harshness, and know that Allah is with the righteous.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The political landscape in Israel is in a turmoil, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's ruling coalition is facing intense internal strife following his decision to fire Shin Bet's chief, Ronen Bar. The dismissal, followed by efforts to remove the attorney general, has fueled accusations that Netanyahu is stifling opposition and avoiding accountability for security failures. Bar, in a defiant move, vowed to remain in office until all Israeli captives are returned from Gaza and a formal inquiry into October 7th incidents is established, something Netanyahu's cabinet strongly opposes.
The dismissal of Shin Bet chief Ronan Bar reveals an internal power struggle in Israel, with Netanyahu seeking control over security and judicial institutions. Bar was a key figure opposing the continuation of the Gaza war, advocating negotiations with Hamas. His removal is seen as part of Netanyahu's broader strategy to silence dissent and tighten his grip on power.
With Bar out, Netanyahu's next target seems to be Israel's top legal officials.
This move signals a shift toward greater authoritarianism, as Netanyahu replaces officials with loyalists willing to prolong the war. Critics warn that Bar's ouster weakens security and accelerates political instability.
As Netanyahu tightens his control, Israel's internal crisis threatened to reshape its future, both politically and militarily.
Netanyahu's push faces growing opposition, especially after dismissing key figures like Ronan Bar and Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant. Bar's role was crucial in defending Israel's representative system, and his removal sparked massive protests. Netanyahu's actions are seen as an effort to solidify absolute power, evade corruption charges, and secure his political survival, all amid the ongoing Gaza war.
Netanyahu's struggle for control continues to stir tensions, as critics warn of the dangers of undermining checks and balances in the regime.
As Israel's political crisis intensifies, Netanyahu faces growing pressure both from within his cabinet and from the public. With mounting calls for accountability, the coming weeks will be crucial for the prime minister's political future. Naqa Ahmed, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
Iranian and Palestinian ambassadors to Russia have attended a press conference in Moscow, which was held ahead of International Quds Day. According to the Palestinian ambassador, five more European countries, including Spain, Belgium, Ireland, Norway, and Slovenia, have recently recognized the state of Palestine.
Many countries are already boycotting Israeli products, and Palestine is calling on other countries to follow suit. Some countries, such as Ireland, are taking a bold and decisive stance. We are seeing changes in the mood of European parliaments in Italy, Brussels, and elsewhere. Even in the US, there are shifts, although it will take time.
Nafal spoke of the need for a new world order in which Russia and China would play a more significant role.
We need a new world order based on justice and freedom. What has been happening in Gaza for 17 months is one-sided aggression. Where is the peace? Where is the international community? Where is freedom and justice? We call for actions that will lead to real change and justice for all.
Iran's ambassador to Moscow emphasized the importance of solidarity with the Palestinian people at a time when Israeli crimes against them have reached an unprecedented level. Kazem Jalali also said that the ongoing resistance in different areas of the West Asia region is spontaneous.
It was the occupation that shaped the resistance in the region. The West claim that resistance groups are proxies of Iran is being raised with the aim of erasing the resistance. As Iran's leader pointed out, using proxy for resistance groups is a completely incorrect term. Attributing this claim to our country is due to the anger of the Israeli regime.
International Quds Day is an annual event marked on the last Friday of the Muslim holy months of Ramadan. On this day, people hold rallies across the world in a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people who live under Israeli occupation. This year's rallies are significant as Israel has intensified its aggression against Palestinians both in Gaza and the occupied West Bank.
Commemorating Al-Quds Day is even more important today as Israel pushes with its plot to kill or expel Palestinians and extend its occupation on the Gaza Strip. Al-Quds Day is a reminder for all freedom seekers of the world who stand against any oppressions to establish justice. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
The Israeli regime has a long record of intentionally targeting journalists, a tactic used to silence those exposing its war crimes and human rights violations. In the past 17 months, 208 journalists have been killed by Israeli occupation forces, Assassination of journalist Hossam Shabat is the latest crime.
Hossam was wearing his press hamlet and vest committing to the safety and journalism standards. However, he was hit by an Israeli missile. Hossam was documenting the Israeli bombing and crimes against his people. That's why he got killed. Surely, as journalists, we appeal to the international community to stop the killing of the journalists.
Known for his relentless efforts to expose Israeli war crimes, genocide, and human rights abuses perpetrated against the Palestinian people, Shabat's killing underscores a disturbing pattern of violence directed towards the press by the Israeli forces to mute any voice calling for justice.
The Israeli occupation deliberately targets the journalists in Gaza since the beginning of the war. Hossam and Mohamed Mansi were killed on the same day, mounting the journalist's death toll to 208. That is an additional proof that the Israeli regime does deliberately and systematically kill the journalists. Prior to his assassination, Hossam was threatened by the Israeli army.
I documented the horrors in northern Gaza minute by minute, determined to show the world the truth they tried to bury. I slept on pavements, in schools, in tents, anywhere I could. Each day was a battle for survival. I endured hunger for months, yet I never left my people's side. That were his last words on X. Shabat's assassination is a stark reminder that the Israeli regime continues to be engaged in a genocidal campaign against the Palestinians, one that seeks not only to annihilate their bodies, but also to erase their voices. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City. The Israeli regime has once again given its green light to a plan that strengthens its grip on the occupied West Bank. The latest move, orchestrated by far-right Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, grants independent status to 13 settler neighborhoods, making them eligible for direct infrastructure and financial support. Analysts warn that this will accelerate land confiscation, allowing the regime to deepen its settlement enterprise at the expense of Palestinian communities.
Annexation is a process, and that's what's happening, like not now. And one of the main junctions for that is in 2020, when that time Trump was in power, and when they announced the annexation plan officially. This is the first time that they announced a map, and they announced about the annexation plan. From there, they started the demolition of the Palestinian communities, taking more and more lands. And also, when this fascist government came to the power, they accelerated this.
For 3 years, the Israeli regime has allocated huge resources to push towards more land grip in Area C. Almost $3 billion were apportioned to make the lives of the settlers easier in the West Bank's stolen lands.
All the settlements had been established in the Area C in the West Bank. Area C, 62% of the West Bank, which all the Palestinian resources there, water resources, agricultural land, everything for the Palestinians. What's been left for the Palestinians out of Area C is Area A and B, which is the built-up area. There's nothing to live on. What they are trying to do is just to make out of the West Bank another 2 or 3 even more Gaza strips in the West Bank, separated cantons that are isolated from each other without any resources, depending totally on Israel and under mercy of their military and settlers.
The de facto situation which the regime is imposing every day in the West Bank aims, according to analysts, to expel Palestinians forcibly or willfully.
Israel is expanding settlement outposts, granting them local councils and huge budgets. The upcoming budget includes massive funds for settlement growth, first legalizing outposts, then developing them into full-scale cities. Meanwhile, settler violence targets Palestinian towns, isolating communities and confining them to segregated areas. The goal is clear: make life unbearable for Palestinians, forcing them toward displacement.
Israel has been expanding settlement despite global condemnations. The new separation plan effectively legalizes further land grabs, making it easier to build and connect settlements while cutting off Palestinian areas.
Israel's settlement expansion continues to reshape the West Bank's landscape, making a future Palestine state increasingly unviable. As Palestinian communities face ongoing land seizures, the world remains largely silent. Naqa Ahmed, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
March 25th, 2015, the day when the Saudi-led coalition launched a military campaign in Yemen to reinstate former President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi, an ally of Saudi Arabia. The campaign aimed to push the Ansarullah movement back to Sada and northern Yemen as well. With support from the United States, the coalition also sought to establish a buffer zone between Saudi Arabia and Yemen.
When the Saudi-led aggression against the Yemeni people began in 2015, it had no clear objectives. However, when the aggressors realized they were entangled in this war, they declared an official goal through a meeting at the United Nations Security Council and Resolution 2216, which was to reinstate Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi to power. Yet they failed to achieve this goal, along with all the objectives they had set for their coalition.
The United Nations estimates that the war in Yemen has killed 337,000 people by the end of 2021. The deaths include those caused by both conflict and indirect causes, such as hunger and preventable diseases. According to UN officials, the indirect causes were to blame for the majority of the deaths, as the Saudi-led coalition maintained an all-out blockade on Yemen, a country dependent on international aid to meet its basic needs, even prior to the war.
As the 10th anniversary of the aggression against Yemen arrives, the blockade continues to severely impact the healthcare sector, causing immense suffering due to the ongoing restrictions on medical supplies. During the years of aggression, airstrikes have targeted 55% of the healthcare sector, rendering 98% of medical equipment non-operational, as we have been unable to repair them or secure spare parts.
The years-long war also devastated other key infrastructure, including airports. The airstrikes, coupled with the crippling blockade, created what the United Nations called the world's worst humanitarian crisis, leaving millions struggling for basic necessities.
There have been many tragedies over the past 10 years of the blockade, both in humanitarian terms and in material losses. On the humanitarian side, there have been significant losses of lives, especially among patients with critical illnesses who needed to travel for treatment but were prevented due to the airport closure. In addition, many students were unable to continue their studies, and tourism came to a complete halt, inflicting severe losses on the national economy.
Archaeological sites were not safe from attacks either. According to a 2019 report by the UN's cultural agency UNESCO, Yemeni cultural heritage sites were heavily affected, mostly through collateral damage. Following years of deaths and destruction, a ceasefire was agreed on April 2, 2022, under UN sponsorship. But while the fighting has largely stopped, Yemen's economic crisis continues, and the struggle to rebuild remains an uphill battle.
Even with a ceasefire in place, the scars of war are still visible across Yemen. Families who lost everything now face the challenge of rebuilding their lives amid an economic crisis. For many Yemenis, the road to recovery is far from over. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
The male surgical department inside Nasser Medical Complex in central Khan Yunis, the last haven for those wounded or injured by the Israeli attacks to survive. This place has been turned into blackened ruin as it was targeted last night by the Israeli occupation. At least one airstrike was launched here, destroying this department that was filled with dozens of the patients and the wounded Palestinians who were fighting for their lives. And as the place was set on fire following the attacks, all the patients and the medical crews here were in a state of panic and just rushing to evacuate instantly. But unfortunately, 10 of them, 8 were injured and 2 were killed by this attack, including a 16-year-old child. this place, despite being inside the heart of the Nasser Medical Complex, was deliberately targeted by the Israeli occupation, turning it into ruins.
Hospitals and medical personnel are protected under international and humanitarian law. However, the occupation knows no boundaries or laws. It deliberately targeted this department, rendering it out of service after it had caused the collapse of the medical sector across the Gaza Strip. Two people were killed, and the rooms in this department, including the oxygen station, were destroyed. This is the only male surgical department here, and now we are forced to treat the remaining wounded, who are now injured for the second time, in inadequate and unsuitable conditions. This is a war crime, and we urge the international community to hold the occupation accountable and prevent such atrocities.
Now, this department is officially out of service. All the patients that were here last night and survived the attack were moved by the medical crews here to other facilities and departments here inside the hospital, where they are now uncertain where exactly and how to receive treatment, because they did survive the previous attacks by the occupation, and now they were targeted again, making them sure that no place is safe in Gaza. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The Supreme Leader's view of Quds Day, the necessity of holding Quds Day rallies. The International Quds Day reminds the brave Muslims living across the world of their duty to persistently support the defenseless Palestinian nation. By suggesting Quds Day, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayh, awakened the conscience of humanity to the issue of Palestine and made people protest against the Zionist regime. Each year, we are witness to the vast participation of Muslims in the rallies. Those who are resisting and suffering innocently in the occupied Palestinian lands are the only ones offering hope about the freedom of Palestine and the annihilation of the usurping Zionist regime. These people should feel and know that Muslim nations across the world of Islam remember and support them. We have to hold such rallies across the Muslim world if we are to create such a feeling in the hearts of those oppressed combatants who are fighting defenselessly in their occupied homeland. The announcement of International Quds Day by our magnanimous Imam Rahmatullahi Alayh was due to this reason. Otherwise, it is clear that a group of demonstrators on the streets of Tehran cannot fight against Israel from here. Subhanallah. The world of Islam should commemorate the International Quds Day. Muslims should not let vassal states destroy Palestine and make the world forget the issue of Palestine by creating an atmosphere of artificial silence about the issue. the treachery of the governments that colluded with the usurping regime at the expense of the Palestinian people's lives must not sink into oblivion. That treachery was not something insignificant. You must commemorate Quds Day and consider it a great occasion. Of course, global media may not reflect it. Those who are imprisoned in Palestine have told us that our slogans, presence, and clenched fists, which are indicative of your sincere intentions and determination, give them the feeling that they have the power to resist. In order to continue resisting, those who have been imprisoned in Palestine should not feel that they are alone. In order to resist, the men and women who are being attacked by the Zionist bullies on the streets of Jerusalem, Gaza Strip, and other Palestinian cities should feel that you support them. Of course, Muslim governments have their own responsibilities in this regard.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
We are with you. How about you? Iradi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Yemen is a shining example of resilience and determination in the face of overwhelming challenges. Despite enduring years of war and foreign interference, the Yemeni people have stood strong, defending their sovereignty and their beliefs. They've also shown unwavering support for Palestine, standing in solidarity with those who share their struggle for justice. Yemen's strength and adaptability have made it a tough target, even for powerful nations like the United States with that huge army. This resilience under almost constant enemy fire highlights their role as a symbol of courage and defiance, not just for their country, but for the region as a whole. I am Bahman Nouray, your host, and in this spotlight, we will try and examine different aspects of the Yemeni resistance. Allow me to introduce my guests. Khaled Barakat, spokesperson from Masar Badil Movement, joining us from Beirut. And Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. Very good to have you on the program once again, gentlemen. It's very good to have and share your company here. I'm going to talk to Khaled first. Well, the military campaigns against Yemen has been going on for years. You know, every few months we have attacks. We have usually airstrikes and everything, but no achievable goal has been there for us to point a finger to. What do you think is this goal for the U.S. Army?
Yes, assalamu alaikum to you and to your distinguished guest, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, and to all your viewers. The U.S. aggression against Yemen comes on behalf of Israel. The U.S. is waging this war in order to protect Israel, because the situation is very clear, even to U.S. public today, even to the public opinion in the world. If you ask anyone why the Yemenis are firing missiles at the Zionist entity, they will tell you because Israel is besieging Gaza. It's because Israel is, blocking any entering of any humanitarian aid, including water and medicine supplies for the past 24 days, complete siege on Gaza. And the Yemeni position has been very clear. They are in support of the Palestinian people, particularly against Israeli war crimes and U.S. And Israel genocide in Gaza. Now, the situation that the United States is in is a very dangerous one, because this could be a potential second Vietnam for the U.S. The Yemeni position is united with the people of Yemen across the board. Millions of Yemenis have come and marched in the last year and a half every Friday, expressing their full solidarity with the Palestinian people. There is a very much a united front in Yemen internally. The Yemeni people, the Yemeni armed forces under the leadership of a revolutionary leadership in Yemen today. And so Yemen is strong despite the siege against Yemen, despite all these aggression. The position of all sides in Yemen under the leadership of Abdel Malik Badreddin Houthi is very much known. The other issue is that the Yemenis are going to continue their strikes against Israel until the Israelis stop their aggression against the Palestinian people. And the shameful position of the Arab reactionary regimes in the region is, is as usual. These allies of U.S. And of Israel are saying no words, particularly regimes that has very much to do with the siege against our people in Gaza, like the Egyptian regime, who does not have any kind of sovereignty even in Egypt to be able to open the, a gate, just a gate. They don't have the will or the strength to say no to Israel, to say no to the United States. And so right. The Yemeni position is a popular position also amongst the people of the region and across the world.
Right, Khaled, exactly. I'm going to talk about that public support that the Yemeni have with their cause later on a little bit. But you rightly suggested to Yemen becoming something more like a Vietnam for the U.S. Army. I'm going to talk to Sayyid Mohsen now about that a little bit more. The Yemeni people have shown and proved every time that they do not bow to pressure, and they fight back no matter how strong the enemy is. So what makes the U.S. government think this time will be different for them?
I think we've got a delusional president who's being pushed by the desperate lobbies, IPAC and all the other Israeli lobbies are in and around Congress. We've got a Benjamin Netanyahu who's desperate to keep wars going so that he can keep his own position alive in the occupied Palestinian territories they call Israel. And I think that that this combination of American insecurity globally in terms of having to try and show that it's still relevant, that it still has power, it still wants to dominate West Asia. I think that all of these things are kind of a perfect storm. Biden had tried to, evade taking on the Yemenis directly. He did a little bit here and there, but the way Donald Trump has stomped in, it's really all, as my colleague rightly said, it is all for Israel. It's all entirely engineered by the Zionist Jewish supremacist lobbies in the background. And now America is gradually pulling itself closer and closer into a quagmire, because they know they were involved in the almost two decades long war that they was inflicted on Yemen, that the Yemeni fighters have a spiritual depth and a belief and a pride and an integrity. There's an entire philosophy that's locked into the warriors of the Yemeni resistance, which is very similar to, say, for instance, Hezbollah. It's quite similar to the IRGC in many ways, and it's similar to the Hush. So this is something that they all have in common, but the Yemenis have it in abundance, in a way which is very hard to put your finger on, because they are the poorest nation of the Arabs. They fought the Saudis, who fronted the American war on them previously, all this time, without any really any aircraft or any kind of really super sophisticated weapons. But eventually they did use the ballistic missiles, and when they started raining down on the Saudi oil refineries and some of their cities, Riyadh, etc., Saudi Arabia was very very quick to wilt, and now doesn't want to know anything about this war. In fact, they'd be denying any support. That's a lie. They're giving them airspace, and they're probably providing the oil. They're providing them space to get the logistics sorted as well. But all of the Arab nations don't want to directly be seen to be taking on Yemen, because they know that they will be hit, just as the UAE was hit previously. On the ground, they've got that experience that these Ansarullah fighters, they're not scared of anything. They have a fighting technique as well, which is unique. They don't fight in huge divisions of armies. They are very adept at sort of small-scale fighting techniques, which General Qasem Soleimani was very, I think, involved in developing, and that these kinds of adaptive techniques that they used would make any conventional army fear going into Yemen. And I don't think the Americans will dare to do that. At the moment, they're just trying to scare them with of course the USS Harry S. Truman, which withdraws and comes forward. But it's been attacked. Dozens of ballistic missiles have gone the USS Harry Truman's way and the carriers around it. And this is now a cat and mouse game of if you like, of death, which we're seeing unfolding, which could very easily lead to a complete regional war.
Right, as Sayed Mohsen mentioned, the importance of the deep-rooted belief that the people of Yemen have in their cause. I'm going to talk a little bit to you, Khaled, about the roots of this Ansarullah movement within the Yemeni society, because they seem to have really, really good and deep-rooted beliefs shared by all the people in Yemen, especially in the northern regions. What's your take on that?
Well, that's a very important question, and that is because the Palestinian cause has been always a cause of consensus, a national consensus in Yemen. Historically, the people of Yemen have always supported the Palestinian people, but they also have always, find difficulties to reach to the forefront of fighting the Zionist entity and support in a real way the Palestinian struggle due to geography. And because of the sophisticated weapons that they are able to develop today, particularly on the missiles front and the drones, they bridge the gap in terms of their participation. It's something that the entire nation of Yemenis, regardless of their political backgrounds, are proud of, and they support that. Now, of course, the Western media, the Israeli media, some of the Arab media, they are trying to minimize this situation by calling the entire nation of Yemen, Houthis. And when [S2] Right. [S1] Everyone knows that what's happening is that the entire nation of Yemen, even the areas that, you know, the United Arab Emirates is occupying and the Saudi Arabia is occupying, even those areas, when you ask the people, they are for Palestine, they support the Palestinian people, and they support the Palestinian resistance. Now, what is important to see in this situation is that all the wars that the Arab regimes and the United States and Britain, with the full support of Israel, have waged against Yemen since 2015, what happened is that the Yemenis have accumulated a very rich experience in terms of fighting, you know, a very complicated battle. The other issue is that we see how the popular participation in the support of the armed forces in Yemen and the leadership in Yemen, and this is very important. They actually genuinely believe that Palestine is a national issue in Yemen and not just a Palestinian issue. And they are also making a very important revolutionary you know, equations here by saying that the cause of Palestine is not just the cause of the Palestinian people, but is the cause of all Muslims, all Arabs, or free will of the world. I mean, today Sana'a is fighting, and at the same time, they're hosting an international conference in support of the Palestinian people, where delegations are coming from all over the world, despite siege. Also, they, despite their difficult situation on all levels, they have been providing not just support, military support, but they also are providing political, social, and even financial support in so many cases. And it is important to see that this is an example. We know that it's the only example right. in the Arab world, but we do see that this is an alternative revolutionary example that is getting the respect, not just of the people of West Asia, but also worldwide.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
The mainstream media of the collective West is knowingly trying to isolate the resistance in Yemen by calling them just Houthis, just trying to make them look an isolated part of the country. But as you just said, especially in the later parts of your talk, that they have really good connections with the local tribes there, Sayed Mohsen, and these tribes are providing them with really, really important resources and even intelligence, something that kind of makes them even distinguished from other territories such as Gaza or Lebanon. What's your take on that? Is this the fact that makes them untouched by the U.S. military?
I think the resilience and the unity of the Yemeni people is definitely a huge factor. And I think that the Americans understand this, which is why they've taken so long to come in directly against the Yemenis, and even reluctantly, I would have said, but it's only with the real push of the moneylender Zionist mafia that they're having to do this. Where it's questionable as to whether America can sustain their naval operations on any long-term scale in the way that they seem to be indicating. It's certainly for sure that the Yemenis can sustain a long-term resistance against any efforts to invade or to sustain a sustained way break the Yemeni people. And this is very important. The Yemeni people, you know, they've gone through that decade plus of the most heinous kind of weaponization of blockades, of food terrorism, medical terrorism, the destruction of their sewage systems, the deliberate spread of cholera as a result, the destruction of all the waterworks infrastructures, the killing of their people in weddings, in funerals, nothing was spared. You know, what the American logistics and their sort of, probably their covert fighter pilots that were flying for the Saudis did was actually a heinous crime. And it was a precursor to what we saw in Gaza, in fact. If you want to see where, in a way, the real practice they did, it was in Yemen, the way they were attacking Hodeidah and attacking Sana'a and various other places. They've been doing it, and now they've done it again, of course, but they're getting an answer. And the answers are going to hit Tel Aviv. They've hit the Eilat port. There's achievements of the Yemenis on the back of all this kind of this sacrifice are that they've managed to ensure that Israel is now something like $47 billion in debt, because that's the money they keep having to borrow to continue their wars. Eilat port was 90% out of action, is now bankrupt, and it's still not back in action. The economy of Israel is collapsing. Those missiles, by the way, that the Yemenis have been landing in Tel Aviv and Eilat and various other places, well, what the result of that is that over a million Israelis have actually done an exodus, and they're not coming back. Most of those are swearing that they'll never come back to Israel. So the achievements of the Yemenis in terms of also the Arab world, in terms of when Islamic Republic of Iran, which was the clear backer of Palestine for many years, there was an easy option to sectarianize the issue and to say, oh, it's Iranians, oh, it's the Shia, and that's got nothing to do with Arabs and the Sunni world. Well, when it comes to the Yemenis, they are Arabs. They are the quintessential Arabs, maybe the original Arabs. And they are now demonstrating that their love for their own brethren in Palestine and their following of the Islamic obligation of supporting the oppressed. This is something right. Very, very much in the face of the rest of the Arab world, and it's a shame for them. And they're going to have to. They may rile up many other Arabs on the grassroots to join the cause.
Right, exactly. You mentioned the versatility and the diverse tactics that the Yemenis use in their fight against the oppressive regimes and the U.S. military in particular. We have highlighted they have used a full range of tactics, from guerrilla warfare to drone technology, missile technology. But at the same time, in response to that, we just see what I may call blind airstrikes against them. So how hasn't the West, by that I mean the US, Israel, and the British, the ones that are usually attacking them, the usual suspects, how are they still going on and knocking on the same door without getting an answer?
That's also a very important question, because if we look at the powers that is trying to dominate our region, it is the usual suspects. It's the Britain, the British, it's the US, it's the Zionist entity, and it's their allies in the region who, are collaborating with these Western colonial powers. But Yemen have a rich history of fighting colonization since the, oppression that they faced at the hands of the Ottoman Empire until today. They understand very well who's their enemy and who's their friends and allies. Of course, the Western powers is trying to blame Iran about almost everything that happens in the world. But the difficulties that they're facing is that the challenges that Yemen is putting in front of these powers. For example, we saw that threats by the United States that if any missiles or even bullet come from Yemen, Iran will be responsible. An hour later, the Yemenis have shelled missiles to occupy Jaffa, and Trump was cornered. And if we look at even Western media, I mean, serious media, there has been like articles and analysis about don't get involved in Yemen. In fact, some of these analyses is like the Yemenis are drawing the United States into a war of attrition. I mean, a war that the United States could face that is way worse than the one they faced in Vietnam or Afghanistan or Iraq. I mean, we're talking about a nation in Yemen that is willing to go, you know, until the end of the road fighting right. for their cause, because they are fighting for a just cause. And as, you know, Brother Sayed Mohsen mentioned, that it's the unity and the internal front in Yemen that is, you know, will make the difference in the face of any aggression, especially by the United States and Britain.
Right. Thank you, Khaled. Sayed Mohsen, my final question for tonight. I want to talk about the ideological commitment of the Ansarullah movement, something that kind of is shared by like-minded groups as well. They do not need a network to gather and to absorb other groups, similar groups. What is it about this that the West do not get? Why don't they understand that this is just an ideological thing that they're after that connects them with other groups, nothing about like any military network or something like that?
Because the West has long since lost its kind of spiritual and emotional connection to the heart. One, that's the first thing. They think of everything in terms of economics and their so-called prioritizing of economics over all other, you know, factors. But the Yemenis build their society, their culture around a traditional rooting of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his teachings. And they have an example. Right. Their movements, the Zaydiya movement, for instance, it's rooted in revolution. It's rooted in taking on imperialism, their very history. And if they go further, then Imam Hussein, I could go to the spiritual side of it, and that is part of it. But also the fact that they are a proud people with a history that goes way beyond most civilizations that I can think of. They have a very, very strong root, and they've suffered colonialism and imperialism for long enough. They know what it is, and they know that what it's like to be subjugated and enslaved by that colonialism. It's very fresh in their minds, and they understand that freedom and liberty requires sacrifice, and they have the bravery and the courage, and they have beautiful souls who are willing to take on the most evil forces in the world, and that is Israel and America.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Like always, I couldn't have had more of this conversation. I wanted this to go on, but unfortunately, it's for the sake of time that we have to end this. Once again, thank you, Khaled Barakat, spokesperson for Masar Badil Movement, joining us from Beirut, and Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, joining us from London. And thank you so much for staying with us on another Spotlight. I am Bahman Nouri, and this is a goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.